It was in the corridor outside that Narathus caught up with them.
"You have not won yet, Belgarath," he hissed.
"No, probably not," Belgarath admitted with aplomb. "But then, neither have you, Narathus, and I imagine Zandramos, oh, you've heard the name before, I trust, will be a bit cross with you when she finds out how miserably you failed here. Maybe, if you start running right now, you can get away from her, for a while, at least."
"This isn't the end of this, Belgarath."
"Oh, never thought it was, old boy." Belgarath reached out and insultingly patted Narathus on the cheek. "Run along now, Grolem, while you still have your health." He paused. "Unless, of course, you would like to challenge me. Considering your limited talents, I don't advise it. But that's entirely up to you." After one startled look at the eternal man, Narathus fled. "I enjoy doing that to his kind," Belgarath gloated.
"You are a dreadful old man, aren't you?"
Zakath said.
"Never pretended not to be, Zakath."
Belgarath grinned. "Let's go talk with Chadi. Narathus is starting to become an inconvenience. I think it is high time he left us."
"You will do anything, won't you?"
Zakath asked as they continued down the corridor. "To get the job done?"
"Of course. And when I interfered with you back in Rakhaga, you could have blown me into nothingness, couldn't you?"
"Probably, yes."
"But you did not. Why not?"
"Because I thought I might need you,
and I saw more in you than the others did." "More than Emperor of half the world?"
"That is trash, Zakath," Belgarath said scornfully. "Your friend here is Overlord of the West, and he still has trouble getting his boots on the right feet."
"I do not," Garion objected vehemently.
"That's probably because you've got Zenedra to help you figure it out. That's what you really need, Zakath. A wife. Someone to keep you looking reasonably presentable."
"I'm afraid that is quite out of the question, Belgarath,"
Zakath sighed. "We will see," the Eternal Man said. The greetings they received in their quarters in the royal palace at Del Perivor were not cordial.
"You old fool,"
Palgara began, speaking to her father. Things deteriorated quite rapidly from there.
"You idiot,"
Zenedra shrieked at Garion. "Please, Zenedra," Palgara said patiently. "Let me finish first."
"Oh, of course, Lady Palgara,"
the Raven Queen agreed politely.
"Sorry. You have many more years of aggravation than I do. Besides, I can get this one alone in bed and give him a piece of my mind."
"And you wanted me to get married?"
Zakath asked Belgarath.
"It has its drawbacks," Belgarath replied calmly.
He looked around.
"The walls are still standing, I see, and there doesn't seem to be any evidence of explosions. Maybe, eventually, you will grow up after all, Paul."
"Another note?" she half-shrieked. "A miserable note?"
"We were pressed for time."
"The three of you went up against the dragon alone?"
"More or less, yes. The she-wolf was with us, however."
"An animal? That's your idea of protection?"
"She was very helpful."
At that point, Palgra began to swear in several different languages.
"Why, Paul," he objected mildly. "You don't even know what those words mean. At least, I hope you don't."
"Don't underestimate me, old man. This is not over yet. All right, Zenedra, it's your turn."
"I think I'd prefer to conduct my discussions with His Majesty in private," where I can be much more direct,"
the tiny queen said in an icy tone. Geryon winced. Then, surprisingly, Tiradus spoke.
"It was discourteous of thee, Emperor of Meloria, to hurl thyself into mortal danger without first consulting me."
Belgarath, it appeared, had been characteristically obscure in his discussion with her before they had gone forth to face the dragon, conveniently forgetting to mention what they had proposed to do.
"I beg thy forgiveness, holy Ceres,"
Zakath apologized, lapsing, perhaps unconsciously, into archaic language.
"The urgency of the matter was such that there was no time for consultation."
"Nicely spoken,"
Velvet murmured.
"We will make a gentleman out of him yet."
Zakath raised his visor and grinned at her, a surprisingly boyish grin.
"As it may be, Karl Zakath,"
Tiradus continued sternly,
"know that I am wroth with thee for thy hasty and unthinking rashness."
"I am covered with confusion, holy Ceres, that I have offended thee, and I hope that thou canst find it in thy heart to forgive mine error."
"Oh,"
Velvet sighed.
"He'll be just fine, Keldar. Were you taking notes?"
"Me?" Silk sounded surprised.
"Yes. You?"
There were far too many things going on, and Geryon was hovering on the verge of exhaustion. "Dernek," he said a bit plaintively, "can you help me out of this?" He rapped his knuckles on the breastplate of his armor.
"If you wish."
Even Dernek's voice sounded cold.
"Does he really have to sleep with us?"
Geryon complained about mid-morning.
"He's warm,"
Sinedra replied in a snippy tone,
"which is more than I could say for some others. Besides, he sort of fills the vacancy I have in my heart. In a small way, of course."
The wolf puppy under the covers was enthusiastically licking Geryon's toes, then inevitably fell to nibbling. They slept for a goodly part of the day, rising about mid-afternoon. They sent a servant to the king, asking to be excused from this night's festivities, pleading extreme fatigue.
"Wouldn't this be a good time to ask to see that map?"
Belden asked.
"I don't think so," Belgarath replied. "Neradus is getting desperate now. He knows how unforgiving Zandramost can be. So he will do just about anything to keep us away from that chart. He still has the king's ear, and he will come up with all kinds of excuses to stop us. Why don't we just let him wonder about what we are up to? It might help to keep him off balance until Sadi has the chance to put him to sleep."
The eunuch bowed a bit mockingly.
"There's an alternative, Belgarath," Silk volunteered. "I could slip around a bit and fish for information. If I can pinpoint the location of the map, a bit of burglary could solve our problem."
"What if you got caught?" Dernek asked.
"Please, Dernek," Silk said in a pained voice. "Don't be insulting."
"It's got some possibilities," Velvet said. "Keldar could steal a man's teeth, even if the man had his mouth closed."
"Better not chance it," Polgara told her. "Neradus is a Grolem, and he may very well have laid a few traps around that chart. He knows all of us, by reputation at least, and I am sure he is fully aware of Silk's specialized talents."
"Do we really have to kill him?"
Ariand asked sadly.
"Neradus, I mean."
"I don't think we have any choice, Ariand,"
Geryon said.
"As long as he's still alive, we'll be stumbling over him at every turn."
He frowned.
"It may be my imagination, but Zandramas seems very reluctant to leave the choice to Ceratus. If she can block us, she'll win by default."
"Thy perception is not altogether awry, Belgarian,"
Ceratus told him.
"Zandramas indeed hath done all in her power to thwart my task.
She smiled briefly.
I tell thee truly, she hath caused me much vexation, and were the choice to be between her and thee, well might I be tempted to choose against her by way of retribution.
I never thought I'd hear that from one of the seers, Belden said. Are you actually coming down off that fence, Sir Addis?
She smiled again.
Dear gentle Belden, she said affectionately, our neutrality is not the result of whim, but of duty, a duty laid upon us before even thou wast born.
Since they had slept most of the day, they talked well into the night. Geryon awoke refreshed the next morning and prepared to face the day's festivities. The nobles at the court of King Olduran had utilized the previous day and probably half of the night preparing speeches, long, flowery, and generally tedious speeches, in praise of our heroic champions. Protected by his closed visor, Geryon frequently found himself dozing, a languor brought on not by weariness but by boredom. At one point he heard a light clang on the side of his armor.
Ouch!
Tenedra said, rubbing her elbow.
What's the matter, dear? Do you have to wear all that steel? Yes, but you know I'm wearing it. What possessed you to try to gouge me in the ribs? Habit, I suppose. Stay awake, Geryon. I wasn't sleeping, he lied. Really? Why were you snoring, then?
Following the speeches, the king assessed the glassy-eyed condition of his court and called upon
good Master Feldegast
to lighten things up. Belden was at his outrageous best that day. He walked on his hands, he did astonishing backflips, he juggled with amazing dexterity, all the while telling jokes in his lilting brogue.
I hope I've managed in me small way to add to the festivities, Your Majesty,
he concluded the performance, after bowing in response to the enthusiastic applause of the assemblage.
Thou art truly a virtuoso, Master Feldegast,
the king complimented him.
The memory of thy performance this day will warm many a dreary winter evening in this hall. Ah, you're too kind to say it, Your Majesty,
Belden bowed. Before the banquet got under way, Geryon and Zakath went back to their quarters for a light meal, since they would be unable to eat in the main dining hall without raising their visors. As guests of honor, however, it was incumbent upon them to be present.
You've never gotten very much entertainment out of watching other people eat,
Zakath said quietly to Geryon after they had entered the banquet hall and taken their seats.
If you want entertainment, watch Belden, Geryon replied. Aunt Paul spoke very firmly with him last night. She told him to mind his manners today. You've seen the way he usually eats. The strain of behaving himself should come very close to making him fly apart.
Narades sat at the king's right elbow. His white eyes were uncertain, even slightly baffled. The fact that Belgarath had made no attempt to get his hands on the map obviously confused him. And then the serving men began to bring in the banquet. The smells made Geryon's mouth water, and he began to wish that he had eaten a bit more earlier.
I must talk with the king's chef before we leave,
Palgara said.
This soup is exquisite,
Tsadi chuckled slyly.
Did I say something amusing, Tsadi?
Just watch, Palgara. I wouldn't want to spoil it for you.
Suddenly, there was a commotion at the head of the table. Narades had half risen, clutching at his throat with his hands. His white eyes were bulging, and he was making strangling noises.
He's choking, the king cried out. Someone help him!
Several of the nobles near the head of the table leaped to their feet and began to pound the Grolem on the back. Narades, however, continued to strangle. His tongue protruded from his mouth, and his face started to turn blue.
"Save him!"
the king almost screamed. But Narada's was beyond saving. He arched backward, stiffened, and toppled to the floor. There were cries of dismay from all over the dining hall.
"How did you do that?"
Velvet murmured to Tadi.
"I take an oath that you were never anywhere near his food."
Tadi smirked wickedly.
"I didn't have to go near his food, Lissel. The other night I took a rather careful note of his customary place at the table. He always sits to the king's right. I slipped in here an hour or so ago and anointed his spoon with a little something that makes a man's throat swell shut."
He paused.
"I hope he enjoyed his soup," he added. "I know I certainly did."
"Lissel," Silk said, "when we get back to Bokdor, why don't you have a chat with your uncle? Tzadi's out of work just now, and Javelin could use a man with his talents."
"It snows in Bokdor, Keldar," Tzadi said with some distaste. "And I really don't like snow that much."
"Oh, you wouldn't necessarily have to be stationed in Bokdor, Tzadi. How would Tolhanath suit you? You'd have to let your hair grow, though."
Zakath leaned forward, chuckling. "Brilliant, Tzadi," he added his congratulations. "And so perfectly appropriate. The Radus poisoned me back in Rakhaga, and you poisoned him here. I will tell you what, I will double any offer Javelin makes you if you will come to work for me in Malzeth."
"Zakath!" Silk exclaimed.
"The employment opportunities seem to be cropping up in all quarters of the world," Tzadi observed.
"Good men are hard to find, my friend," Zakath told him.
The king, shaking and with his face white, was being slowly escorted from the room. As he passed their table, Geryon could hear him sobbing. Belgarath began to swear under his breath.
"What's the matter, father?"
Polgara asked him.
"That idiot will be in mourning for weeks. I'll never get my hands on that map."
Chapter 16. Belgarath was still swearing when they returned to their quarters.
"I think I have outsmarted myself," he fumed. "We should have exposed Narada's before we killed him. There's no way to discredit him in the king's eyes now."
Saradis sat at the table eating a simple meal with Toth standing protectively over her.
"What hast thou wrought, Ancient One?" she asked.
"Narada's is no longer with us," he replied. "And now the king is in mourning for him. It could be weeks before he recovers his composure enough to show me that map."
Her face grew distant, and Geryon seemed to hear the murmur of that strange group mind.
"I am permitted to aid thee in this, Ancient One," she said. "The child of Dark hath violated the commandment we laid upon her when we assigned her this task. She sent her henchmen here rather than coming to seek the chart herself. Thus certain strictures upon me are relaxed."
She leaned back in her chair and spoke briefly to Toth. He nodded and quietly left the room.
"I have sent for one who will assist us," she said.
"What exactly are you going to do?" Silk asked her.
"It might be unwise of me to tell thee in advance, Prince Keldar. Canst thou, however, discover the location of the remains of Narada's for me?"
"I should be able to do that.
I'll go ask around a bit."
Then he left the room.
"And when Prince Keldar returns with the location of dead Narada's, thou, King of Riva, and thou, Emperor of Meloria, go even unto the king, and prevail upon him in the strongest of terms, to accompany you at midnight to that place. For certain truths shall be revealed to him there, which may lessen his grief.
Saradus, Belden sighed, why must you always complicate things?
She smiled almost shyly.
It is one of my few delights, gentle Belden. To speak obscurely doth cause others to ponder my words more carefully. The dawning of understanding in them causes me a certain satisfaction.
Not to mention the fact that it's very irritating.
That, perhaps, is also a part of the delight,
she agreed impishly.
You know, Belden said to Belgrath, I think she's a human being after all.
It was about 10 minutes later when Silk returned. Found him, he said a bit smugly. They've got him laid out on a bier in the chapel of Kamdar on the main floor of the palace. I looked in on him. He's really much, much more attractive with his eyes closed. The funeral's scheduled for tomorrow. It is summer, and he probably won't keep.
What would be thine estimate of the hour, goodman?
Saradus asked Durnik. The smith went to the window and looked up at the stars.
I make it about an hour before midnight, he replied.
Go then now, Belgerian and Zakath. Use all the powers of persuasion at your command. It is absolutely essential that the king be in that chapel at midnight.
We will bring him, Horisires,
Zakath promised her. Even if we have to drag him, Geryon added.
I wish I knew what she was up to,
Zakath said as he and Geryon walked down the hall outside.
It might make the king a bit easier to persuade, if we could tell him what to expect.
It might also make him skeptical,
Geryon disagreed.
I think Saradus is planning something fairly exotic, and some people have difficulty accepting that sort of thing.
Oh, my, yes,
Zakath grinned.
His Majesty does not wish to be disturbed,
one of the guards at the king's door said when they asked admission.
Tell him, please, that it is a matter of extremest urgency, Geryon said.
I'll try, Sir Knight, the guard said dubiously. But he is much distraught at the death of his friend.
The guard returned a few moments later.
His Majesty consents to see thee and thy companion, Sir Knight, but pray thee be brief. His suffering is extreme.
Of course, Geryon murmured. The king's private chambers were ornate. The king himself sat in a deeply cushioned chair, reading a slender volume by the light of a single candle. His face looked ravaged, and there were signs that he had been weeping. He held up the book after they had presented themselves to him.
A volume of consolation, he said. It doth not offer much of that to me, however. How may I serve ye, Sir Knights?
We have come in part to offer thee our condolences, Your Majesty,
Geryon began carefully.
Know that first grief is always sharpest. The passage of time will dull thy pain.
Ah, but never banish it entirely, Sir Knight.
Undoubtedly true, Your Majesty. What we have come to ask of thee may seem cruel in the light of present circumstances. And we would not presume to intrude upon thee were the matter not of such supreme urgency, not to us so much as it is to thee.
Say on, Sir Knight,
the king said, a faint interest showing in his eyes.
There are certain truths which must be revealed unto thee this very night, Your Majesty,
Geryon went on.
And they can be revealed only in the presence of thy late friend.
Unthinkable, Sir Knight,
the king said adamantly.
We are assured by the one who will reveal these truths that they may in some measure assuage thy sorrow. Erezel was thy dearest friend, and he would not have thee suffer needlessly.
Truly, the king conceded.
He was a man with a great heart.
I am sure, Geryon said.
There is perhaps another, more personal reason for thee to visit the chapel where Master Erezel lies in state, your majesty,
Sakath added.
His funeral will be held, we are all told, tomorrow. The ceremony will be attended by most of thy court. This night provides thee the last opportunity to visit with him privately, and to fix his well-loved features in thy memory. My friend and I will guard the chapel door to ensure that thy communion with him and with his spirit shall be undisturbed.
The king considered that.
It may be even as thou sayest, Sir Knight, he conceded. Though it may wring my heart, I would indeed look upon his face one last time. Very well, then, let us repair to the chapel.
He rose and led them from the chamber. The chapel of Khamdar, the Erendish god, was dimly lighted by a lone candle standing on the bier at the body's head. A gold-colored cloth covered the immobile form of Narados to the chest, and his face was calm, even serene. Knowing what he did of the Grolem's career, Geryon found that apparent serenity a mockery.
We will guard the chapel door, your majesty,
Sakath said,
and leave thee alone with thy friend.
He and Geryon stepped back out into the corridor and closed the door.
You were very smooth back there,
Geryon told his friend.
You weren't so bad yourself, but smooth or rough. At least we got him here.
They stood at the door, awaiting Taradas and the others. After about a quarter of an hour, they arrived.
Is he in there?
Belgoroth asked Geryon.
Yes. We had to do a bit of fast talking, but he finally agreed.
Standing beside Zaradas was a figure, robed and hooded in black. It appeared to be a woman, a Dal most likely, but it was the first time Geryon had ever seen one of that race clad in any color but white.
This is the one who will aid us, the seeress said. Let us go in unto the king, for the hour is nigh.
Geryon opened the door, and they filed in. The king looked up in some surprise.
Be not dismayed, King of Perivore,
Tiradus said to him.
For, as thy champions have told thee, we have come to reveal truths to thee, truths which will lessen thy sorrow.
I am grateful for thine efforts, lady,
the king replied.
But that is scarce possible. My sorrow may neither be lessened nor banished. Here lieth my dearest friend, and my heart lieth on that cold bier with him.
Thine heritage is in part Dal, your majesty,
she said to him.
So thou art aware that many of us possess certain gifts. There are things the one you called Erezel did not tell thee ere he died. I have summoned one who will question him ere his spirit doth sink into the darkness.
A necromancer?
Truly, I have heard of such, but have never seen the art practiced. Knowest thou that one with such gifts cannot misspeak what the spirits reveal?
I understand so, yes.
I assure thee that it is true. Let us then probe the mind of this Erezel and see what truths he will reveal to us.
The dark-robed and hooded necromancer stepped to the bier and laid her pale, slender hands on Narados' chest. Tiradus began posing the questions. Who art thou?
She asked.
My name was Naradus,
the figure in black replied in a halting, hollow voice.
I was Grolam Archpriest of the Temple of Torak at Hemel and Ashiva.
The king stared first at Ceradus, and then at the body of Naradus in stunned astonishment.
Whom didst thou serve?
Ceradus asked.
I served the child of Dark, the Grolam priestess, Sandramas. Wherefore camest thou to this kingdom? My mistress sent me hither to seek out a certain chart and to impede the progress of the Child of Light to the place which is no more. And what means didst thou use to accomplish these ends? I sought out the king of this isle. A vain and foolish man, and I beguiled him. He showed me the chart which I sought, and the chart revealed to me a wonder which my shadow conveyed immediately to my mistress. Now she knows precisely where the final meeting is to take place. I prevailed upon the king's gullibility, and was able to lead him into various acts which delayed the Child of Light and his companions, so that my mistress might arrive at the place which is no more before him, and thereby avoid the necessity of leaving the issue in the hands of a certain seeress whom my mistress distrusts. How is it that thy mistress did not herself perform this task, which was laid upon her, and not upon thee?
Saradus's voice was stern.
Sandramas had other concerns. I was her right hand, and all that I did was as if she had done the deeds herself. His spirit doth begin to sink out of reach, holy seeress,
the necromancer said in a more normal tone of voice.
Ask quickly, for soon I will no longer be able to wrest further answers from him. What were these concerns of thy mistress, which prevented her from seeking the answer to the last riddle herself, as she was commanded to do? A certain Grolam hierarch from Tolmurgos, Agachak by name, had come to Meloria seeking the place which is no more, hoping to supplant my mistress. He was the last of our race, with enough power to challenge her. She met him near the Barrens of Finda, and killed him there.
The hollow voice broke off, and then there came a despairing wail.
Sandramas,
the voice cried.
You said that I would not die. You promised, Sandramas.
The last word seemed to fall away into some unimaginable abyss. The dark-hooded necromancer's head slumped forward, and she was shuddering violently.
His spirit has gone, holy seeress,
she said in a weary voice.
The midnight hour is past, and he can no longer be reached. I thank thee,
Ceradus said simply.
I but hope, holy seeress, that I have been able in some small way to aid thee in thine awesome task. May I retire now, for contact with this diseased mind hath distressed me beyond measure.
Ceradus nodded briefly, and the necromancer quietly left the chapel. The king of Perigord, his face ashen but firmly set, walked to the bier. He took hold of the golden cloth that covered Noradus to the chest and hurled it to the floor.
"Some rag, perhaps?"
he said from between clenched teeth.
"I would not look upon the face of this foul Grolem more."
"I'll see what I can find, Your Majesty," Durnick said sympathetically.
He stepped out into the hall. The rest stood silently by as the king, his back to the bier and his jaws clenching and unclenching, stared at the back wall of the chapel. After a few moments, the smith returned with a torn piece of burlap, rusty and mildewed.
"There was a storeroom just down the hall, Your Majesty. This was plugging up a rat hole. Was it more or less what you had in mind?"
"Perfect, my friend. And it pleased thee. Throw it over the face of that piece of carrion. I declare hereunto ye all that there will be no funeral for this miscreant. Some ditch and a few spadefuls of earth shall be his grave."
"More than a few spadefuls, I thank Your Majesty," Durnick suggested prudently. "He's corrupted your kingdom enough already. We wouldn't want to pollute it any more, would we? I'll take care of it for you."
"I like thee, my friend," the king said. "An it please thee, bury the Grolem face down."
"We'll see to it, Your Majesty," Durnick promised.
He nodded to Toth, and the two of them roughly lifted the body of Noradus from the bear by the shoulders and dragged it from the chapel with its sandal-shod feet bouncing unceremoniously across the floor. Silk stepped closer to Zakath.
"So, now we know that Agachak is dead," he said quietly to the Malorian.
"Agat will be delighted to hear it. I don't suppose you would be willing to send a messenger to him to let him know about it?"
"The tensions between your brother and myself have not relaxed all that much, Keldar."
"Who are ye all?" the king demanded. "Was this so-called quest of thine mere subterfuge?"
"The time hath come for us to reveal ourselves," Saradus said gravely. "The need for concealment is now past, for the other spies Xandramas hath set in this place without the knowledge of Noradus cannot commune with her without his aid."
"Oh, that's Xandramas, all right," Silk said. "She doesn't even trust herself."
Geryon and Zakath raised their visors with some relief.
"I know that your kingdom is isolated, Your Majesty,"
Geryon said in his normal dialect.
"How much do you know of the outside world?"
"There are times when seafarers call upon this harbor," the king replied. "They bring us news as well as goods."
"And what of the events that shaped the world in times past?"
"Our forebears brought many books with them, Sir Knight, for the hours at sea are long and tedious. Among those volumes were those of history which I have read."
"Good," Geryon said. "That should make things a bit easier to explain. I am Belgarion, King of Riva," he introduced himself.
The king's eyes widened.
"The Godslayer?" he asked in an awed voice.
"You've heard about that, I see," Geryon said wryly.
"All the world hath heard of it. Didst thou indeed slay the god of Angrak?"
"I'm afraid so. My friend here is Khal Zakath, Emperor of Meloria."
The king began to tremble.
"What event is of such magnitude that it persuaded ye two to put aside thy hereditary enmity?"
"We'll get to that in a moment, Your Majesty. The helpful fellow who's outbearing Noradus is Durnick, the most recent disciple of the god Aldur. The short one there is Beldon, also a disciple.
And the one with the whiskers is Belgarath, the sorcerer.
The Eternal Man?
The king's voice was choked.
I wish you wouldn't throw that around so much, Kerrigan,
Belgarath said in a pained tone.
Sometimes it upsets people.
It saves time, Grandfather,
Kerrigan replied.
The tall lady with the lock of white hair is Belgarath's daughter, Polgara, the sorceress. The little one with the red hair is Tenedra, my wife. The blonde girl is the Margravine Lysel of Drasnia, niece to the chief of Drasnian intelligence. And the blindfolded girl who exposed Noradus is the seeress of Kel. The big fellow who is helping Durnik is Toth, her guide. And this one is Prince Keldar of Drasnia.
The richest man in the world?
The reputation might be a trifle exaggerated, Your Majesty, Silk said modestly.
But I am working on it.
This young fellow with blonde hair is named Ariand, a very close friend.
I am awed to be in such august company. Which of ye is the child of light?
That's the burden I bear, Your Majesty,
Geryon told him.
Now, though, it's largely a part of Aelorn history and prophecy. You may know that from time to time in the past, there have been meetings between the Child of Light and the Child of Dark. We are going toward the last one there's ever going to be. The meeting is going to decide the fate of the world. Our problem at the moment is discovering where the meeting is supposed to take place.
Thy quest, then, is even more awesome than I had imagined, King Belgarion. I will aid thee in whatsoever way I can. The foul Grolom Naradus misled me into hindering thee. Whatever small way in which I can assist thee may serve as partial recompense for that error. I will send forth my ships to seek out the place of the meeting for thee, wheresoever it may be, from the beaches of Ebal to the reef of Corim.
The reef of what? Belgarath exclaimed.
Corim, ancient Belgarath. It doth lie to the northwest of this isle. Its location is clearly marked upon that chart which thou hast sought. Let us repair to my chambers, and I will show thee. I think we've just about come to the end of it, Belgarath,
Belden said.
As soon as you take a look at that map, you'll be able to go home.
What are you talking about?
That's the end of your task, old man. We certainly appreciate your efforts, though.
You wouldn't mind too much if I came along, would you?
Oh, that's up to you, of course. But we wouldn't want to keep you from anything important you've been neglecting.
Belden's grin grew vicious. Needling Belgarath was one of his favorite forms of entertainment. As they turned toward the chapel entrance, Geryon saw the she-wolf sitting in the doorway. Her golden eyes were intent, and her tongue lolled out in a wolfy smile. Chapter 17 They followed the king through the dimly lighted and deserted midnight halls of the palace at Perivor. A tense excitement filled Geryon. They had won. No matter how hard Zandramos had tried to prevent it, they had still won. The answer to the riddle lay no more than a few yards away, and once it was answered, the meeting would take place. No power on earth could prevent it now.
Stop that, the voice in his mind told him. You have to be calm now. Very calm. Try to think about Faldor's farm. That always seems to settle you.
Where have you...
Geryon started, then broke off.
Where have I what?
Never mind. The question always irritates you.
Amazing. You actually remembered something I said. Faldor's farm, Geryon. Faldor's farm.
He did as he had been told. Though the memories had seemed to fade over the years, they suddenly returned with startling clarity. He saw the shape of the place, the sheds and barns and the kitchen, the smithy, the dining hall on the lower floor, and the gallery on the second floor where the sleeping chambers were, all surrounding that central yard. He could hear the steely ring of Durnick's hammer coming from the smithy, and smell the warm fragrance of freshly baked bread coming from Aunt Paul's kitchen. He saw Faldor and old Kralto, and even Brill. He saw Dorun and Runderig, and at last, Zupret, blonde and pretty and artfully deceitful. A vast kind of calm came over him, not unlike the calm that had engulfed him when he had stood in the tomb of the one-eyed god in the city of Endless Night so long ago. "That's better," the voice said. "Try to hold on to that. You're going to have to think very clearly in the next few days, and you can't do that with your mind racing every which way. You can fly to pieces after it's all over. That's if I'm still around. We can hope." Then the voice was gone. The guards at the king's door admitted them, and the king went directly to a cabinet, unlocked it, and removed a roll of ancient, crackling parchment.
"It is much faded, I do fear me," he said. "We have tried to protect it from the light, but it is very old."
He went to a table and carefully unrolled the chart, weighting down the corners with books. Once again, Geryon felt the tense excitement as he held back slightly, reaching back into his memories of Faldor's farm to steady himself. The king of Perivor pointed with his finger.
"Here lieth Perivor," he told them, "and here doth lie the reef of Corrim."
Geryon knew that if he looked too long at that fateful spot on the map, the wild excitement and sense of triumph would return, so he merely glanced at it, then let his eyes rove over the rest of the map. The spellings were strangely archaic. His eyes automatically sought his own kingdom. Riva. It was spelled R-Y-V-A. There was also Arendia, A-R-Y-N-D-I-A, Kerek, K-H-E-R-E-C-H, and Tolnaedra, as well as Draxnaya, and Thal Morgos.
"It is misspelled," Zakath noted. "The proper name is Turim Reef."
Belden began to explain, but Geryon already knew the answer.
"Things change," the dwarf said. "And among those things are the way we say certain words. The sounds of words shift over the centuries. The name of that reef has probably changed several times over the last few thousand years. It's a common phenomenon. If Belgarath were to speak in the language the people spoke in the village where he grew up, for example, none of us would be able to understand him. I would guess that for a time the reef was called Torim, or something like that, and it finally settled into Turim. It may change again a few times. I've made a study of that sort of thing. You see, what happens is that..."
"Will you get on with it?"
Belgarath demanded in exasperation.
"Aren't you interested in expanding your education?"
"Not at the moment, no,"
Belden sighed.
"Anyway," he continued, "what we call writing is just a way to reproduce the sound of a word. As the sound changes, so does the spelling. The difference is easily explained."
"Thine answer to the question was cogent, gentle Bowden,"
Ceradus said.
"But in this particular case, the change of the sound was imposed."
"Imposed?" Silk said. "By who? Whom?"
"It was the two prophecies, Prince Keldar. In furtherance of their game, they altered the sound of the word to conceal the location from ancient Belgorath and from Zandramas. These two were both required to solve the riddle ere the final meeting could take place.
Game? Silk asked incredulously.
They were playing games with something this important? These two eternal awarenesses are not as we, Prince Keldar. They contend with each other in myriad ways. Oft-times one will attempt to alter the course of a star while the other strives to hold it in place. At other times, one will attempt to move a grain of sand while the other exerts all its energy to keep the grain motionless. Such struggles oft-times consume whole eons. The riddle game they have played with Belgorath and Zandramas is but another of the ways they have used to formalize their contention. For should it ever come to pass that they confront each other directly, they would rend the universe apart.
Geryon suddenly remembered an image that had come to him in the throne room at Vomimbre, just before he had exposed the Murgo Nechak to King Coradulan. He had seemed to see two faceless players seated at a game, where the moves had been so complex that his mind could not follow them. With absolute certainty now, he saw that he had caught a momentary glimpse of the higher reality Ceradus had just described.
"Did you do that on purpose?"
he asked the voice in his mind.
"Naturally. You needed a bit of encouragement to get you to do something that was necessary. You are a competitive sort of boy, so I thought the image of the great game might get you started."
Then something else occurred to Geryon. "Ceradus," he said, "why is it that there are so many of us, while Zandramas appears to be almost totally alone?"
"It hath ever been thus, Belgerian. The child of Dark is solitary, even as was Torak in his pride. Thou, however, art humble. Thou hast never pushed thyself forward, for thou knowest not thine own worth. This is endearing in thee, child of light, for thou art not puffed up with thine own importance. The prophecy of Dark hath ever chosen one, and one only, and hath infused that one with all its power. The prophecy of Light, however, hath chosen to disperse its power among many. Although thou art the principal bearer of the burden, all of thy companions share it with thee. The difference between the two prophecies is simple, but it is profound."
Belden was frowning.
"You're saying that it's sort of like the difference between absolutism and shared responsibility, then?"
"It is much as thou hast said. The difference is more complex, however."
"I was just trying to be concise."
"Now that's a first," Belgorath said.
Then he looked at the King of Perivor.
"Can you describe this reef to us, Your Majesty? The representation on the map isn't too precise."
"Gladly, ancient Belgorath. In my youth I sailed thither, for the reef is something of a marvel. Seafarers assert that there is none like it in all the world. It doth consist of a series of rocky pinnacles rising from the sea. The pinnacles themselves are easy to see and therefore to avoid. Other dangers, however, lurk beneath the surface. Savage currents and tides do rush through gaps in the reef, and the weather there is ever unsettled. By reason of these perils, the reef hath never been charted in any detail. All prudent sailors avoid it entirely, giving that dangerous obstruction wide berth."
Durnick and Toth entered.
"We've taken care of it, Your Majesty," Durnick reported. "Naradus is safely in the ground now. He won't trouble you, or us.
ever again. Did you want to know where we put him?
Methinks not, my friend. Thou and thy massive companion have done me a service this night. I implore thee, if ever I can do thee service in return, hesitate not to call upon me.
Serratus, Belgarath said, is this the last part of the riddle? Or are there other bits and pieces lurking about?
Nay, ancient one, the game of the riddles is finished. Now the game of deeds doth begin.
Finally, Belgarath said with some relief. Then he and Belden fell to studying the map.
Did we find it? Durnick asked Silk. I mean, does the map show the location of Corim?
Silk led him to the table. It's right here, he said, pointing.
This is a very old map. Modern maps misspell the name. That's why we had to come here.
We've been doing a lot of running around chasing after scraps of paper, the smith observed.
We have indeed, my friend. According to Serratus, it's all been part of a game being played by the friend Geryon's got inside his head, and the other one, who is probably inside Zandramos's head.
I hate games.
Oh, I don't mind them.
Oh, that's because you're Drasnian.
Oh, that could be part of it, I suppose.
It's in the approximate location where the mountains of Corim were, Belgarath, Belden said, measuring off distances with his fingers. They were probably moved a bit when Torak cracked the world.
A lot of things were moved that day, as I recall.
Oh, yes, Belden agreed fervently. I had trouble standing up, and I'm built closer to the ground than you are.
You know something. I have noticed that myself.
Your Majesty, the old man addressed the king.
Could you be a bit more specific about the reef? Trying to land on the side of a rock pinnacle from a boat that is pitching around in the surf would be difficult and dangerous.
If memory doth serve me, ancient Belgarath, I do seem to recall a few rocky beaches built up doubtless from shards and boulders, tumbled from the sides of the peaks and then pounded to bits by the restless sea. When the tide is low, this rubble accumulated over the aeons doth rise above the surface of the sea, providing means whereby one may move freely from one pinnacle to the next.
A sort of like that land bridge from Morendland to Meloria, Silk recalled sourly. That was not a very pleasant trip.
Are there any landmarks of any kind? Belgarath pressed. That reef goes on for quite a ways. It could take a lot of wading to find the exact place we need to reach.
I cannot attest to this from mine own true knowledge, the king said cautiously. But certain seafarers have asserted that there appears to be a cave mouth on the north side of the highest pinnacle. On occasion, more adventurous ones have sought to go ashore to explore its depths, for, as is widely known, remote caves oft-times serve as repositories for the ill-gotten gains of freebooters and pirates. The pinnacle, however, hath ever repulsed their most valiant efforts. Each time one of these brave souls attempts landing there, the sea becomes angry, and sudden storms do appear from a cloudless sky.
That's it, Belgarath, Belden chortled exultantly. Something's been going out of its way to keep casual explorers out of that cave.
Two somethings, I gather, Belgarath agreed. You are right, though. We have finally located the exact place of the meeting. It is in that cave.
Silk groaned.
Art thou ill, Prince Keldar? The king inquired.
Oh, not yet, your majesty. But I think I'm going to be.
Our Prince Keldar has difficulties with caves, Your Majesty,
Velvet explained, smiling. There's nothing difficult about it at all, Izzel, the rat-faced little man disagreed. It's really very simple. Every time I see a cave, I go into an absolute panic.
I have heard of this malady, the king said. One wonders what may be its mysterious source.
Oh, there's nothing mysterious about the source of mine, Your Majesty, Silk said dryly. I know exactly where it came from.
If it is thine intent to dare the perilous reef, ancient Belgarath, the king said then, I will provide thee and thy companions with a stout ship to convey thee thither. I will give orders that the ship be ready to sail with the morning tide.
Your Majesty is very kind.
It is but small payment for the service thou hast rendered to me this night.
The king paused, his face reflective.
It may be even as the spirit of foul Naradus proclaimed, he mused. I may indeed be a vain and foolish man, but I am not immune to the promptings of gratitude. You all have preparations to make, he said then. I will not delay you more. We shall meet again on the morrow, ere you depart.
We thank you, Your Majesty,
Geryon said, his armor creaking as he bowed. Then he led the others from the chamber. He was not at all surprised to see the she-wolf sitting just outside the door.
The time is exactly right, isn't it, Ceratus?
Polgara said to the seeress, once they were all out in the corridor.
At Ashaba, you said it would be 9 months until the meeting. As I make it, the exact time will be the day after tomorrow.
Thy calculations are correct, Polgara.
It works out precisely, then. It should take us one full day to reach the reef, and we will go to the cave on the following morning.
Polgara smiled a bit wryly.
All this time we've been fretting about arriving late, and now we get there precisely on time, she laughed. What a waste of all that perfectly good worrying.
Well, now, where and when? Dernick said. All that's left to do is to go there and get on with it.
Oh, that sums it up, I'd say, Silk agreed. Eriond sighed, and Geryon felt a chill suspicion that was not quite a certainty.
Is it going to be he?
He asked the dry voice.
Is Eriond going to be the one who dies?
But the voice would not answer. They entered their quarters with the wolf close behind them.
It's been a long time getting here, Belgarath said wearily. I'm getting a little old for these extended journeys.
Old? Belden snorted. You were born old. I still think you've got a few miles left in you, though.
I think that when we get home, I will spend a century or so in my tower.
That's an idea. It should take you about that long to get it cleaned up. One other thing, Belgarath. Why don't you fix that loose step?
I'll get around to it.
Aren't we all assuming that we are going to win? Silk said. I think that making plans for the future at this point might be a bit premature, unless the Holy Seeress might see fit to let slip a hint or two about the outcome. He looked at Ceradus.
I would not be permitted to do that, Prince Keldar, even if I knew the answer.
You mean you don't know? He asked incredulously.
The choice hath not yet been made, she said simply. It may not be made until I stand in the presence of the Child of Light and the Child of Dark. Until that moment, the outcome doth still hang in the balance.
What good is it
being a seeress if you cannot predict the future?
This particular event is not susceptible to prediction, Keldar, she said tartly.
I think we had all better get some sleep, Belgarath said. The next couple of days are going to be hectic. The she-wolf followed Garion and Synedra to their room and entered with them. Synedra looked a bit startled at that, but the wolf went directly to the bed and put her forepaws up on it to look critically at the puppy, who lay sleeping on his back with all four of his paws in the air. The wolf gave Garion a slightly reproachful look.
One notes that he has grown fat, she said. Your mate has ruined him with overfeeding and pampering. He is no longer fit to be a wolf. He no longer even smells like a wolf. One's mate bathes him from time to time, Garion explained. Bathes, the wolf said in a tone loaded with contempt. A wolf should be bathed only by the rain, or in the course of swimming across a river.
She dropped to her haunches.
One would ask a favor of your mate.
One will convey your request to her. One had hoped you might ask your mate if she will continue to care for the young one. One believes you need not add that she has spoiled him so badly that he is unfit to be anything but a lapdog.
One will phrase your request cautiously.
What is she saying?
Synedra asked. She wants to know if you would be willing to take care of the puppy.
Of course I will. I've wanted to do that all along.
Then she knelt and impulsively put her arms about the she-wolf's neck.
I will care for him, she promised. One notes that her scent is not unpleasant, the wolf said to Garion.
One has also noticed that.
One was fairly certain that you had.
Then the wolf rose to her feet and silently left the room.
She's going to leave us now, isn't she?
Synedra said wistfully.
I'm going to miss her.
What makes you think that?
Why else would she give up her baby?
I think there's a bit more to it than that. She is preparing for something.
I'm very tired, Garion. Let's go to bed.
Later, in the velvet darkness as they lay close together in the bed, Synedra sighed.
2 more days, and I'll see my baby again. It has been so very, very long.
Try not to dwell on it, Synedra. You need your rest, and thinking too much about it will keep you awake.
She sighed again, and after a few moments, she drifted off to sleep.
Syreddis is not the only one who has to make a choice, the voice in his mind told him.
You and Zandramas also have choices to make.
What choices are those?
You have to choose your successors. Zandramas has already chosen hers. You should be giving some thought to your last task as the Child of Light. It is going to be fairly significant.
I suppose that, in a way, I'll sort of miss having that to carry around. But I'll be glad to get rid of it. Now I'll be able to go back to being ordinary again.
You never were ordinary, you know. You have been the Child of Light since the moment you were born.
I know I'm going to miss you.
Please, don't get sentimental, Garion. I may stop by from time to time just to see how you are doing. Now, get some sleep.
When he awoke the next morning, Garion lay in bed for quite some time. He had tried for very long not to think about something, but now he had no choice but to face it squarely. He had every reason in the world to hate Zandramas, but
finally. He slipped out of bed, dressed himself, and went looking for Belgorath. He found the old man in the central room, seated with Saradas.
"Grandfather," he said, "I've got a problem."
"There's nothing unusual about that. What's got you worked up this time?"
"Tomorrow, I'm going to meet Zandramas."
"Why, do you know? I think you're right."
"Please don't do that. This is serious."
"Sorry, Geryon. I'm feeling whimsical today."
"I'm afraid that the only way we're going to be able to stop her is to kill her. And I'm not sure I'll be able to do that. Torak was one thing, but Zandramas is a woman."
"Well, she was. I think her gender has become irrelevant now, though, even to herself."
"I still don't think I'll be able to do it."
"There will be no need, Belgarion," Saradas assured him. "Another fate doth lie in store for Zandramas, no matter what my choice may be. Thou wilt not be required to shed her blood."
A vast wave of relief came over Geryon.
"Thank you, Holy Siras. I've been afraid to face up to that. It's good to know that it's not one of the tasks I've got ahead of me. Oh, by the way, Grandfather, my friend up here,"
he tapped his forehead,
"has been visiting again. Last night he told me that my final task will be to choose my successor. I don't suppose I could get you to help me, could I?"
"No, Geryon. I'm afraid not. I don't think I'm supposed to, am I, Saradas?"
"Nay, ancient Belgorath. That task lieth on the Child of Light alone."
"I was afraid you might look at it that way," Geryon said glumly.
"Oh, one thing, Geryon," Belgorath said. "The one you choose has a fair chance of becoming a god. Don't choose me. I am not suited for the job."
The others drifted in singly or in pairs. As each one entered, Geryon considered their faces, trying to picture each of his friends as a divinity. "Aunt Paul?"
"No, that didn't seem right somehow." And that automatically excluded Durnik. He could not deprive her of her husband.
Silk? That idea very nearly caused Geryon to collapse in helpless laughter.
Zakath?
It had some possibilities. Zakath was an Angorak, and the new god would be the god of that race. Zakath was a bit unpredictable, however. Until recently, he had been obsessed with power. A sudden onset of godhood might unsettle his mind and make him revert. Geryon sighed. He would have to think about it some more. The servants brought in breakfast, and Zenedra, obviously remembering her promise of the previous night, fixed a plate for the puppy. The plate contained eggs, sausage, and a generous dollop of jam. The she-wolf looked away with a shudder. They deliberately avoided the subject of tomorrow's meeting as they ate. The meeting was inevitable now, so there was no point in talking about it. Belgorath pushed back his plate with a look of contentment on his face.
"Don't forget to thank the king for his hospitality," he told Geryon.
And then the she-wolf came over and laid her head in the old man's lap. Belgorath looked startled. The wolf had usually avoided him.
"What is it, little sister?" he asked her.
Then, to everyone's astonishment, the wolf actually laughed and spoke quite plainly in the language of humans.
"Your brains have gone to sleep, old wolf," she said to Belgarath. "I thought you'd have known me weeks ago. Does this help?"
A sudden blue nimbus surrounded her.
"Or this."
She shimmered, and then the wolf was gone. Standing in its place was a tawny-haired, golden-eyed woman in a brown dress.
"Mother!"
Aunt Paul exclaimed.
"You are no more observant than your father, Polgara,"
Poledra said reprovingly.
"Geryon has known for quite some time now."
Belgarath, however, was staring in horror at the puppy.
"Oh, don't be silly, old man," his wife told him. "You know that we are mated for life. The puppy was weak and sick, so the pack had to leave him behind. I cared for him, that's all."
The smile on the face of the Seeress of Kell was gentle.
"This is the woman who watches, ancient Belgarath," she said. "Now is thy company complete. Know, however, that she is ever with thee, as she has always been."
Part 3. The High Places of Corum. Chapter 18.